The draft is a week from tonight. Joining us from NBC and Pro Football Talk on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line is Chris Sims. Chris, good morning. Appreciate you coming on. How you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. How you doing?
Doing very well. So let's just get this out of the way. Your thoughts on the NFL season starting on time, knowing your guess is, I suppose, as good as anybody's right now.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, I have no clue of what's going to happen. I'm hopeful. I am. I mean, I think, you know, again, gosh, I really think it will be much needed. You know, the thing I've said on PFT with Florio, we talk about it in the morning is, you know, one, I think it will do a great service for our country because we got nothing else to do and we're all going a little stir crazy, too, especially when it comes down to late August, early September. You know, the other thing I'll say is this, and you know, again, I don't know this is 100% foolproof, but I think we've seen a little evidence already. I don't think the players are going to be scared to go back and play. Now, I know that this sickness hurts everybody, but of course, it's a very, very, very rare few of seeing, you know, athletes in their 20s who are tip-top physical condition, you know, being affected by this. But so I think players will be willing to do it. But will they be willing to make the sacrifice of, okay, yes, you're going to have to do it, but you're not going to see your mom or your dad or your grandpa or anything like that all season long. You're almost going to have to stay in quarantine that way. The NFL would have to find some formula, some right way to do it to make it happen, which, of course, is a lot of moving parts and very hard. But I do think the players, because I know I was one at one point in my life, I would be going, no, I want to play football. I don't care if there's, you know, fans in the stands or not. I want to play. And I was a stubborn 26, 27-year-old, like most football players are, who think you're indestructible and nothing can hurt you.
Chris Sims with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. It's an interesting perspective, and playing without fans, I think, is something that could very well happen as well. But you talked about being in that bubble, so to speak. Might be state to state as well, based on what the governor of California is saying. Again, your guess, my guess, is as good as anybody's right now.
I know, yeah. It's crazy. And we all got to you know, play it by ear, see how it goes. Of course, listen to the experts and things like that. But I do hope that, you know, the NFL top minds and owners are trying to find some way or at least starting to brainstorm about doing this. I do. You know, I do it. I know selfishly, yes, I know I want to see it. But I truly think that, you know, they can find a way to make it happen and keep people safe. Man, I think it would be a big Band-Aid for our whole country and take our minds off these weird times.
Hey, Chris, before we get to the NFL version of the quarterback carousel, let's talk a little bit about the draft. I was vocal when I heard that the general managers, at least the group of them that were going to speak for everybody else, said, hey, man, we need more time. I'm like, what do you need more time for? You get enough wrong anyway with all the time that you've had in the past. Let's just go do the draft.
Right.
I'm not sure that I buy into the initial. What do you think is the biggest, if there is, a drawback of the way it will be done this year?
Well, I to me, you know, first off, I'm with you. You know, again, yeah, so a lot of the times, you're right, the extra time, all the meetings, it's overanalyzed, and, you know, they end up screwing up. Like, hey, look at DK Metcalf last year. You know, how did he get out of the first round? How? Why? Because his hair was pink and he had a nose ring? You know, that's why. I mean, that's what you hear. But he's a good kid. Oh, he didn't run the route. You know, the dissecting is too much as is anyways. I mean, he's loved in Seattle, and he's, you know, was in the running for Rookie of the Year last year and certainly one of the best rookie receivers. So I'm with you. They are way too over-analytical about the whole thing. Now, I do think there is some purpose for guys who have maybe a little bit of a checkered pass, right? Legitimate, like, you know, off-field issues, things like that. Hey, teams, yes, they want to know these guys, get to see them in person, spend a full day with them to really get a feel for the guy and go, okay, was this some young kid who just messed up and did some college stuff, college stupid stuff, or is this a kid that's truly got malice? You know, I think those guys are going to be hurt in the draft because I think teams are going to chicken out with them this year more than ever. And then, of course, the same thing with a little bit of the medical history guys. I think, you know, you're going to see that too. So to me, that's where I see, you know, the biggest issues. You know, other than that, I'm with you. You're going to be able to do the Zoom, the FaceTime, all the films available for all these guys. And they still should be able to feel very comfortable to come draft night about, you know, their evaluations and where they're at in this whole process.
All right. Now, let me switch to the NFL version. Tom Brady ended up in Tampa. I think we're all in agreement that I think he's on a better roster now in totality than the roster will be or would be in New England. And then The idea that Jameis and Cam are still out there for the world. Give me your thoughts on those guys.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, Brady, hey, listen, you know, there's, of course, a lot of positives. Do I think Tom Brady's one of the 10 best quarterbacks in football anymore? No, I don't. Of course not. I still think he's got a lot of, you know, great qualities he can bring to a football team with his experience, his work ethic, you know, leadership. He's going to show that team was very young and talented, like you said, you know, how to win. They don't have a lot of guys like that, let alone he can still throw the ball. That's the big thing. My big question with Brady is not his arm strength or his ability to read defenses. The thing I've talked about on the show and my podcast a lot was towards, you know, you get to the last 6-8 games of the year, he was reluctant to hold the ball in the pocket at times. And that's probably my number one concern with him going forward. You know, there was a 20-yard completion on a deep in cut, and then there was a back underneath for a 5-yard completion. He was very quick to throw to the back instead of just sitting in there and hitting the big throw. And that scares me a little, especially with Bruce Arians, and we know he likes to push the ball down the field. So that would be one area I look at to go, ooh, I'll be interested to see how that plays out. Because
Can I counter with the weather factor? Do you believe there's anything to the idea that he's not playing up in the Northeast, falling on harder ground, that playing down here could actually benefit him in that last 5-6 weeks?
Well, it definitely could. I will, you know, you will feel better and looser and warmer and more elastic in Tampa than you in December and November as compared to New England. You're right about that. I no doubt about it. But listen, these are normal issues you see with older quarterbacks. Yeah, he's smart. He's trying to there's a conscious effort to not take a beating during a football game where, you know, yeah, young guy, middle-aged quarterback, they don't give a damn as much. But I still think it's going to work. Don't get me wrong. I'm just throwing a little caution into the wind there. And you said it. I mean, there's a lot of talent on that football team. The pass defense stunk last year, so they need to improve that. But, hey, they were, even before Tom Brady, one of those teams I put a little red mark next to say, watch out for the Bucs in 2020. And now they got him. Yeah, that's a big-time move, certainly, for their whole organization. Now, the other guys you're talking about, man, you know, hey, listen, Carolina screwed over Cam Newton. They kind of got the fly under the radar on that one. I thought that was a BS move by them. You know, kind of knowing they were going to trade him, to release him that late in the process, to let him have the green light to go seek a trade, like, oh, yeah, when all the quarterback spots are filled, thanks, guys. Thanks a lot. I do think the Los Angeles Chargers would make sense with Cam Newton, but everything I know is they want no part of that right now. And other than that, I don't know where he ends up. I really don't. I have a hard time. You know, would the Miami Dolphins take a chance on him and say, okay, forget the quarterback this year, and let's see if we can ride with Cam Newton? I don't know. I do think that when Cam is healthy, of course he's special. And, you know, he's a big time. I mean, he's got everything. He really does. Now, the health is an issue. And, of course, with the times we're in right now, getting that medical checkup could be an issue, too. But I don't know where he ends up. Jameis Winston, to hit on that, you know, man, Jameis Winston, when you break him down, and if you just watch his good, you would go, he's one of the 5 best quarterbacks in football. The amount of throws and plays he makes are unbelievable. Just the problem is, when you look at the bad, you go, oh, damn, is he one of the 5 worst quarterbacks in football? That was so stupid. I can't believe he did that. So, you know, there is a lot of coaches out there that look at Jameis Winston and go, oh, man, I wanted to bring Jameis Winston in this year. Man, you watch his film. It's special. You know, most coaches think they can coach, you know, the bad stuff out of Jameis Winston. I'm not so sure. I'm convinced that anybody can. Well, I'm not sure. So, and the other thing is this with Jameis Winston, guys. Most teams don't want to bring a guy like Jameis Winston in as their pure backup because it's going to cause problems on the team. You know, for half the league, players would walk off the field every day going, why is Jameis Winston our backup? He outperforms our starter every day. And most teams aren't going to want to deal with that. They want their starting quarterback to be their leader. They frame their team around that quarterback, and that's how they want it. I really think if I'm Jameis Winston, I'm calling the 49ers, and I'm calling the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I say, I'll play for the minimum. I just want to go there. Those are the two places that make sense to me. You know, Big Ben's on his last leg, and they have a good football team. Do they really want to fall off planet Earth if he gets hurt again like they did last year and have to, like, play some bull crap offense to throw the ball 3 yards because they don't trust their quarterbacks and then win games with their defense? And then the 49ers, hey, they're a Super Bowl team. I like Nick Mullins. I don't know if I want to give him the keys to the car in week six if Jimmy Garoppolo got seriously hurt. So those would be two things where Jameis, I think, could go and advance his career like we saw Teddy Bridgewater. Don't go to a place and worry about, oh, I want to play and I need to play. Go somewhere and, you know, redevelop some of your skills and you know, redevelop your perception around the NFL with a good coaching staff and some talent around you that will make you look better.
Chris Sims with us from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports. He joins us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. What do you think Todd Gurley has left in the tank?
Well, I still think Todd Gurley's got some good stuff left in the tank. You know, you just can't wear him out. I don't think he's the type of guy that you want to give him the ball 30 times a game. But, you know, it's, you know, a cautionary tale. Like, I still last year saw plays where I went, ooh, that explosiveness is real. Look at him bounce outside and turn the corner and do that. But I also saw moments, though, of reluctancy to cut off that knee a little bit and plant it in the ground and drive. But, you know, again, it's going to have to be managed. We know that. It's not perfect. It's not going away. But do I think Todd Gurley still has it in him to be a 1,000-yard rusher? I do. Yes, I do. You know, it's just, you know, I just don't want to wear him into the ground where we're giving the ball 320 times, you know, for the full year. I don't think he can last if it's that style of play.
So here's the other problem for the Atlanta, or I think Nick and I both perceive it as a problem. We'll ask you. The idea that $50 million is going to basically go to a quarterback and a wide receiver, it is what it is. But the NFL is not a place where you can say it's only money. Historically, it's never worked with these types of percentages, getting and winning a Super Bowl. Am I supposed to be thinking about the money every time they trot out? And I go, gosh, wouldn't we have been better served if, as opposed to paying $50 million to two positions?
Well, yeah, I hear you. I mean, you know, listen, it's why you don't see a lot of – you don't see New England doing that a whole lot, right? You know, because why? They want to build a full football team. You know, I think it is. It's dicey. And, you know, the perfect example is really you guys, the Falcons. You know, it showed. You guys get ravaged. If you guys get injured, the team falls apart because there's no depth on the football team because, of course, so much of the money is to, you know, six and seven guys on the whole – on the whole roster, and it is hard to build a team that way. You know, you saw Seattle kind of struggle with that after they went to the Super Bowls where, yeah, like eight or nine guys were making up like 60% of the salary cap. You know, yeah, you're not going to win that way. It's hard. You know, two or three injuries. Keanu Neal gets hurt. This guy gets hurt. And all of a sudden you go, man, we're falling apart. We can't stop anybody on defense, or we can't pass protect, or whatever it may be. So that's really the issues. It makes it very hard on a guy like Thomas Dimitroff to always have to find these value signings and low money guys to be backups and fill roster holes. It's tough. It really is. And I'm with you. I don't know if it's necessarily the correct way to build a football team.
What was the thought around the league? Were you guys surprised when Dimitroff and Dan Quinn, it was announced they were both coming back?
I don't know if I want to say surprise. I thought it was 50-50. I really did. I didn't know how it was going to play out. I did not. I thought, yes, it could go either way. I really was kind of getting there at the end of the season going, if they get fired, I won't be shocked. If they ended up staying, I wouldn't be shocked either. And, of course, you know, Arthur Blank came out and gave him the vote of confidence and everything there. Hey, listen, they've done some great things. I mean, Thomas Dimitroff, you know, you say what you want. You know, he's built a team that's, you know, been really pretty damn relevant here for a long time. And he's drafted some big-time talented football players along the way and made some great moves in free agency. You know, you guys won the Super Bowl and you got some star players, and it's always hard to say goodbye to those players. And, yeah, maybe you've paid a few too many of them to stick around and, you know, their best times are gone. But I'm a big fan of Thomas Dimitroff. I think he's got a really good eye for talent. And I like Dan Quinn, too. I mean, I think Dan Quinn, his energy, the toughness and hustle with which the team plays for, you know, I get it. I would have kept them, too. Only thing I want to say with this is the Falcons and Dan Quinn. You know, that Seattle scheme, it just, I wish it would just be a little versatile, need some versatility. That's my biggest issue with the Falcons or teams that run that defensive scheme. Hey, listen, there's only been three 10-point fourth quarter leads blown in the history of the Super Bowl. You know what they all had in common? They were all the same Seattle defensive scheme. And there's a reason for that. You know, the 49ers this year, the Falcons in, you know, 2016, and the Seattle Seahawks in 2014. It's just a little too predictable. And the good offenses and good quarterbacks, you know, once they get a feel for the talent on the field, you can start to expose the scheme a little bit because you walk to the line of scrimmage every time and you go, I know what defense they're in. Okay, yep, let's run this play. This will screw it over. And that's my one issue with Dan Quinn maybe in the Falcons.
I don't know why I was thinking about this last night, but you're the perfect guy to ask, or at least one of the guys who I believe really looks at some film and tries to figure out why certain things happen on a Sunday. Why did you win? Why did you lose? I think there were certain guys who really think that way on top of everything else. Take Bill Belichick out of it. Give me three coaches that you believe that on Sunday give me a distinct advantage to beat your football team.
Okay, yep. I mean, I think the first, I'm going to go to the obvious. Sean Payton would be one right off the bat. You know, Sean Payton, one is, you know, a magician in game plan, and he's got his hands in the defensive side of the ball, too. And then I think the other thing is Sean Payton's ability to adjust during the game and realize what's going on and just the toughness of what that football team and the way they play. He would certainly be one of those guys. I'm not even going to hesitate with that. The next guy I'm going to go with, I'm going to go with Kyle Shanahan. I am right now. Yeah, Kyle's the best offensive mind in the sport. And they put pressure on you constantly with their ability to be aggressive through his game planning with unbelievable game plan design runs and play action passes. And, I mean, that to me is, you know, special. Shanahan's teams always have a chance because of his great offensive mind. And, yes, he plays that Seattle defensive scheme, and they've built a defense that really fits that scheme. So I look at Shanahan as being one of those guys, too, who's able to evaluate the game. And I know he's not always popular in Atlanta because of the Super Bowl, which we can have a talk about that after I get done answering this, all right? And then, third, who am I going to go with there? Man, this is a good question. I like you put me on the spot here with this one.
But I think the reason I asked it is because it's not a simple thing. You know, Sean Payton had 4 to 5 years where his football team was 7-9. I'm not knocking your choice because I think in a moment he might give me an advantage. But I think it's kind of crazy that because I couldn't come up with three. Do I think that Andy Reid might be a guy that gives me an advantage? I don't know. Is it just because what I saw last year? Is it, you know, top of my thing? I find it kind of amazing. We talked about quarterbacks, how there aren't enough. And kids are playing at 8 years old and getting tablets at 10 and figuring out plays. There didn't seem to be 32 for a while. I couldn't think of three NFL coaches that I distinctly believe give me an advantage on game day Sundays.
Well, you know, I'll I hear you there. I get it. Sean McDermott to me is a special football coach who I think is week to week. They are adaptive with their defensive game plan, and they understand how they want to attack you and build a football team. The culture that Pete Carroll has set there in Seattle, again, I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, my gosh, look at these plays. They're so creative. No, it's done through a different way. It's done through their physicality, their intensity, their ability to always compete and never think they're out of it. It's something that he's instilled into their football team throughout the year, so it's not necessarily a Sunday thing. To what you're saying, and I get that too. You know, listen, I also look at Sean McVay, and I think, man, he's pretty damn smart. I would think he'd reinvent himself as well. And then I'm going to say Jim Harbaugh or John Harbaugh up in Baltimore would be a pretty good guy too to have a good feel for how the game's going and making tough decisions that are necessary to win the football game. But, yeah, well, listen, you know, that's why New England's New England. That's why, you know, what you're saying. I mean, I worked in New England. It's a different level. Nobody would argue that. When you walk into 32 organizations' facilities, the one that stands out will always be New England because you go, man, they're a little different there. Whoa, this is a different building. You feel it as soon as you walk in there. And, I mean, there's a reason. Yeah, people say Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time. You're never going to hear me say that. I think he's one of the greats. He's not the greatest. I mean, do people really think if Aaron Rodgers didn't play for the New England Patriots for the last 20 years, they wouldn't have 6 Super Bowls? I don't think that. I mean, I think they'd be probably going on an 8-peat right now if Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback there. So they are a special, special group there. They've gone 14-6 without Tom Brady, to your point. And Belichick and that staff, they're just on another level of their thinking, their work ethic, the hours they put in, their ability to always streamline and find the most effective way to do things is really what makes them such a special organization.
You kind of just did it, Chris Sims, finishing up with him from Pro Football Talk. You talked about New England being different. Pull back the curtain a little bit more. What sets them apart?
Well, you know, they have a vision of how they want to build their football team. All right, man, this is a tough one. You know, just everything is a well-oiled, fine-tuned machine. From the front office down to the coaching staff, it's all cohesive. Belichick's in charge of both. Nick Caserio oversees the front office aspect, but, of course, has to always go to Belichick to get the final word or final decision, whatever it may be. They're not always obsessed with looking for the sexy, sexy, big-time superstar player like we were just talking about with the Atlanta Falcons. No, they're more into, like, value signings. And, yes, if we have one or two guys get hurt, it doesn't matter. We got four or five guys behind them that we feel like aren't a big drop-off from our starters that can fill in that way, let alone it's game plan-specific game planning on both sides of the ball weekly. And that's where, you know, I complained about the Atlanta defensive scheme. You know, New England's, it's a different defense every week. It's whatever we got to do to beat this team. Oh, it's one defensive lineman, five linebackers. Oh, it's, you know, four defensive linemen, two linebackers. You know, it's a bunch of DBs and safeties in the game. It's everywhere because he does whatever he thinks he has to do to win on that week. And, you know, I could sit here for a half hour and talk about what separates them. You know, when they install plays and things on their football team, guys, they start with the basics, and they don't move until he feels like the basics have been mastered. You know, they'll play cover two and for 4 weeks straight in the preseason because if people keep screwing up, he'll just go, no, we're going to play cover two until we got it, and then we'll move on to learning cover three. I played them in the preseason 1 year, guys, in Tampa Bay, and he played cover two every play of the snap, every play of the game because the defense had been screwing up cover two. And I'm telling you, when we were at fourth and goal on the 3 yard line, he was playing cover two to get the point across to his football team. So, you know, there's just so many things there. But the attention to detail, he's a curmudgeon. He's one of the most brilliant people on earth, in my opinion. He's the Wolf of Wall Street. Sorry.
We won't have the time for this because she had mentioned Shanahan and the Super Bowl. And if you're telling me you'll come back one day and do it, but I have a couple of problems with the end of that football game, and one of the guys up in the booth, and Shanahan was one, Matt Ryan, a quarterback. He snapped the ball with 11 and 12 seconds a couple of times, up 8 points. New England only had to burn one timeout. The infamous football. But why are you not telling your quarterback, take the play clock down to two, for the love of God?
I would argue to you, why? So if that happened in New England, we would blame Bill Belichick, not Josh McDaniels. So what is the head coach doing then on the sideline?
Well, I'm blaming everybody. I'm blaming everybody.
Well, yeah, but that's where who's got the direct? The head coach has to dictate that, though. He has to say, hey, Kyle, I want to run the ball here, and I want to run up the clock.
No problem.
I want to run up the clock.
But when Matt Ryan in his head, how the hell are you taking snaps with 11 seconds left in a world where you can't give him the football back?
Him. They played aggressive and snapped the ball and did that all year long. This is where the head coach has to go in. You can't just go, hey, do what you always do. No, you can't. It's a different part of the game. You're right. All your points are right. But to me, that is what the head coach is making $5 million a year to do, not just to sit there and observe the football game.
Yeah, I think we all stand in agreement. Nobody is without blame in that situation. Chris Sims, always a pleasure having you on. We'll talk again real soon, hopefully.
Hey, definitely, guys. Be good. Stay safe.
You do the same. Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk, NBC, joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line.